Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Matt and Dwight Just Might, a podcast about two Midwest-based comedians who are making their way through life, figuring out as they go along, love, laughter, long-ass shoots that you're not getting paid to be on.
Labor of love.
Labor of love. Yeah, all that good stuff, everybody. My name is Matt Alana Martin. I am one of the Midwest-based comedians. And I think this might be the first time in the history of the podcast where we actually have introduced ourselves in the first 60 seconds.
I know, we're losing our edge.
Yeah, we used to be like French cinema. It was really like avant-garde and like, you know, you come to us, you already know who we are. Why do we have to introduce ourselves?
Yeah, does Marin introduce himself every podcast?
I think he does, doesn't he?
I don't know.
I have not listened in a long time. You know, it's a great podcast. He's a great podcaster.
Sure.
It's just like, I don't know. Like, do you listen to a lot of podcasts?
Not as much as I used to. Not as much comedy as I used to.
Yeah. I think that's the thing. I think when it's, you know, you are so totally, that's your world, right? Like mm-hmm. as it is ours, because it's our job and our passion. Then yeah, I hardly ever listen to any comedy podcast. The only comedy podcast, as far as breaking down comedy and kind of getting into the nuts and bolts of it that I liked, is I really like, the Dana Carvey and David Spade one called Fly on the Wall.
Ah,
that one has been interesting because it's tons of Saturday Night Live stories. They just basically invite on other cast members that were on SNL, writers, like people who were guest hosts for the show. And so it's just kind of an interesting thing, but I'm sure I'll get tired of it too. Like I used to listen to WTF all the time.
Yep.
And then eventually I'm just like, I don't need this much Marin in my head, you know?
Yeah. It's like, I have to like really like the guest.
Yeah.
Or like their perspective. I listened to a podcast called Good One, and it just has, and they just break down a single joke or two from like a comic special, which is very interesting sometimes.
Sometimes, but I feel like that the host of that podcast is super annoying, in my opinion. The host of Good One, Jesse Thorne or whatever.
Yeah.
It's to me, his style is infuriating to me.
Yeah.
It is very much in the, NPR style, the Terry Gross school of interviewing,
right?
By being, I don't know why people think Terry Gross is a great interviewer. She's a dog shit interviewer.
Longevity.
Like, yeah, I mean, that's pretty much it. But I mean, she'll just ask she'll say a long rambling statement, mm-hmm. and then be like, "Do you agree?" Or I did listen to the Fresh Air that they did with Roy Wood Jr. It was kind of a repeat because he was speaking at the press, national press secretary, you know, the big
dinner. Oh, yeah.
DC, whatever it's called.
Correspondence.
Correspondence Center. Thank you. That's what I couldn't think of is that word, correspondence. And
that's why you're not Terry Gross, man.
Yeah, no, that's right. I'm talking shit, but, you know, she knows where the fuck a correspondent is. Anyway, so I listened to that because I love Roy Wood Jr. and I went here. And literally, they play a clip from one of his specials from Father Figure. And then she literally just says the clip back to him verbatim and goes, so was that true? And it's just like, first of all, did you need to repeat the entire clip, the entire joke back to him? And she doesn't even repeat it. She just explains the joke that you just listened to.
You know, what makes comedy the most fun.
Yes, is when you dissect it. Yeah.
That is what people that don't typically interview comedians do. Mm-hmm. Like I just did a radio interview today and mm-hmm. it's like, it was fine, but there was one point where they were just trying to get me to say a joke.
Yeah.
And which
if they tell you that in advance, that's the deal, then great. Yeah. Like we're all here to play along and move tickets and But if they are trying to just lead you to it or goad you into it. Yeah.
It's like, what joke of yours defines who you are as a comic? I was like, how long is this podcast? We're doing like a 3-part series.
Yeah.
We're getting existential with it.
Yeah.
I thought you were just going to have me plug my dates, read from my calendar, but.
Well, this wasn't even a podcast. This was a radio show. This is like terrestrial radio. Yeah.
Yep. Yep. We did it over Zoom. So it's like a long form, kind of like that Fresh Air style. That's what it felt like.
You can go ahead and tell me that you're on Fresh Air. And, you know, I know you don't want to admit it because I was just bagging on Terry. But
Team Terry Gross, baby. Team Terry Gross. Let's get into it. I'm banging for Terry Gross.
When I was still a tour manager for bands, one of the bands played at World Cafe Live, which is another like public radio program, and it's actually taped in the exact same building that Terry Gross is. It's in the Philadelphia NPR building.
Yeah.
And so the big joke was we were gonna like sneak our way upstairs and steal Terry Gross's coffee mug. Like, for some reason, we thought that was like the holy grail item that you could get. And just knowing it's probably just had, you know, it's like crusty. It hasn't been washed in a really long time. It gets rinsed out, but that's it, you know?
Yeah.
And then there's like lipstick smudges on it. And it's just like this grimy, grimy coffee cup of Terry Gross.
You never want anything from anyone's place of work, their office.
Yeah.
Like, that's why the people that got into Nancy Pelosi's office were just disappointed. They're like, what is it? You want to really hurt someone? Just go to their home. Do what the militia in Michigan did. Just show up at their house. That's where the good shit is.
I think that they were disappointed when they got into Pelosi's office because they didn't find Mike Pence there, because that's who they were looking for, apparently.
They were. He was in the getaway car.
Yeah. Oh, man.
The one Trump did not send. I try to listen to a lot of my friends' podcasts if they aren't exactly what we're doing.
Yeah.
They aren't talking comedy.
I know. Is this the key to a successful podcast? Is when we list all these other podcasts you could be listening to instead? We first both admit that we don't listen to a lot of podcasts, and really, like, only losers would listen to podcasts.
You mean to tell me you listen to a podcast and send in a question?
I do try to listen to my friends' podcasts. I do like Brent's podcast a lot, Field Trip. I like that one a lot. It's usually not really comedy oriented, and his is not particularly. Field Trip is great because it's not, they're not breaking down like jokes and talking about the comedy biz, which I understand this is the entire premise of our podcast. Yeah. We're literally just shitting on our own podcast. Look, we're glad you guys are listening, but we would never listen to this podcast.
That's so fun. I do listen to Jackie and Lori every weekend. Jackie Cation, Lori Kilmartin, like especially on drives. I like that one because I like them as people, and they do get into like comedy nuance, but it's more it's like more specific and catered to people that have been doing this for a long time. I feel like on the road and like talking about staying at bad hotels, and Jackie's always like, do you remember the guy from 1982? And I was like, I wasn't even alive yet, dog.
Yeah, no, it is a great podcast, and it was a big inspiration for this podcast, honestly. And I think we may have said that in the earliest episodes of this, and the fact that what we're doing is kind of a lower rent version, like a barely making a living at it in comedy diagnosis. I don't know. Maybe I'm just in a salty mood. I was just on a film shoot.
I got to hear about this.
And it was actually delightful and everything. And I don't know why I'm grumpy. I don't, because it's just like, You do a lot of these things. So, you know, there's so much just like waiting around, right?
Yeah.
I literally had three lines. I'm in one like 30-second long scene with another character, and I have like three lines. And, you know, these things always run long, and then there's a problem with the camera. They got to reset the camera, and then they're adjusting on the fly. And they did a great job. Honestly, everybody there was super cool and did a great job. And like Anthony Pizza was in the mix, and he's like the guy who directed Hoosiers. Rudy and stuff like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, he's part of like the team with David Anspaugh that did that hot run of sports movies, you know?
Yeah.
I say that now I'm gonna look him up. I think he directed all those things.
They just lied. They just lied to get you there.
Yeah, exactly. No, I'd met him before. I know that he did Rudy because he told us a great story from Rudy. Angelo Pizza, not Anthony. Oh my God, I think I called him Anthony all day long, which is his dad's name.
That is great. A power move, man.
Yeah, yeah.
That is. How you did just with confidence.
That's exactly
what I did. How you doing, Anthony?
Yeah, that's exactly what I did.
So, I really love your work, Anthony.
Yeah, that was his dad. So anyway, man, yeah. So I'm not ever coming back to this thing. Anyway, no, he was the writer for Rudy. He was the writer, and David Anspaugh was the director. And they did My All-American and Hoosiers. He wrote that as well. So, you know, he also looks like, I just pulled up his IMDb. He also wrote an episode of Knots Landing. So Good
wow.
For him. Yeah.
So what was this for?
This was a film, a short film that Jonathan Zaff, who is a had done comedy for a little bit here in Bloomington. I don't know if he still does stand up, but he did while he was at IU. And he was directing this thing, and he had some like real kind of pro people coming in, like Angela Pizzo was there, you know, like kind of, I think just kind of showing him the ropes a little bit. It seemed like he was kind of consulting in a way. And then Joe Throckmorton and his team were like shooting it and everything. So it was cool. It was just like this short film about a guy and a girl who are,
that's how it starts,
star-crossed lovers in the night or whatever. And I'm like a friendly guy on the bus that the guy, the kid, the male lead, like talks to.
Yeah. Interesting.
So that was, but yeah, but basically I just sat around all day until and then I sat around like for hours, mic'd up, but not shooting.
Man, that's how they got the jinx.
I know. I had to be real careful not to admit anything while I was going to the bathroom. So I don't know. Yeah, but I don't know why I'm in such a grumpy mood. Podcasts are great, guys, and you should listen to all of them.
And look up. Oh man, I'm glad it was like something original and not like a, now everything's getting a reboot.
Oh yeah,
like Rudy 2 starring Matt Alano Martin.
Yep, I was playing Rudy. The gimmick here isn't that he's too small; it's that he's too old. No, yeah. it was you know, these things are like interesting to do and fun, and like I was asked specifically to read for this part by Jonathan, I think because I'm the only person he knows who's over 40. And so he was like, He's like, oh, I fucked up and I wrote an old person into the script. What am I going to do now? And so, but he remembered me from the Comedy Attic and everything. And so I did have to self-tape last weekend while I was in the hotel.
Okay.
And then sent it in, and I didn't have anyone to play off of. And I just told him, I was like, I'm here in Iowa by myself. I don't have anyone to read with. So this is going to be just me doing the lines. And so they said it was good, and they cast me from that. And so it was a delight. But yeah, it's one of those things where it's such a short script, man. It's like maybe like, I don't know, probably 12 pages total. But still like a 3-day long shoot. It's still like, it just takes so long to do this stuff.
Yep.
The entire thing is on a bus. So basically I've been for a long time, I was just sitting around waiting. And then for the last several hours, I've been on a bus that's just been aimlessly driving around Bloomington while we're shooting and then doing takes and then start over, move the camera to a different, now we're going to do it from this angle, you know, all that kind of stuff.
That will put you in a shitty mood. I get it.
Yeah. Maybe I'm just seasick. Maybe that's what it is. I don't know.
Yeah. When's the last time you've been on a bus that long?
That's the thing is like, you know that I'm a good actor because I would never ride the bus. I mean, this ass rides in private vehicles only. Okay. Public transit. I don't think so. I don't think so. Yeah.
You're really showing your range there.
I did bring a little doily to sit on. I was like, oh, this is an actual city bus. Like, I'm not sitting. No. It was good. They did say that they were like, yeah, and you know, since you're a comedian, if you guys want to like improv, we'll get the scene as it's written a couple times. And then if you want to improvise after that, we can try to do some things. But it was getting so late that we were all just like, nope, we're done. Okay, good.
Yeah.
You're done with this? Okay, we're gonna leave now.
You're over with it. Because it's just they need you there. It's not even like, all right, in my downtime I'm gonna try to like work on something. It's just like scroll your phone all day. And then, you know, it's like, oh, the lighting outside is terrible, so we're going to have to overcompensate for this. Mm-hmm. And then it's just so much of not revolving around you, where it's like doing stand-up. It's just like, it's my show, baby. This is like, you sit in the corner and wait. We'll call you when we need you.
Right. Yeah. And
30-hour work week.
It is very, I mean, obviously it's very different than stand up, obviously, but, you know, it's still like is interesting enough. I had done a similar type of thing, although I wasn't on camera, I was on set. I had written like originally it started off as a web series and then it got converted into like a short film script, which nothing happened with it. But when it was still a web series, I developed this thing with Jessica Lewandowski and her husband, Matt, who were two filmmakers that lived here in Bloomington at the time. We developed this idea for like a web series and we shot, I want to say the first two episodes of it as like proof of concept. And we did it like guerrilla style. We went into IU late at night we just told them that this was like an authorized, like we didn't, this, we, there were no IU students. Like, I think maybe some of the actors were IU students, but we had no, it wasn't like, this is for a class. We just told them it was for a thing.
Yeah.
And so we just took over the, and the, so the janitors just left us alone. Instead of cleaning that floor, they just waited. So we guerrilla shot like in classrooms and all this shit, like on IU. It was very fun actually. And that process, even though I had written it, and so I was just there to do like any punch up or if, oh, this isn't working, I need to change up this dialogue, kind of be on set for that.
Yeah.
That was incredibly long too. That was a super long night of being there. And I wasn't even acting or being on camera for any of it, but that I was way more engaged in because it was my thing. You know, yeah. I had like so much creative. This was, I was literally like asked like, hey, do you want to come on? Do you want to be the friendly guy in the bus? And do three lines and like, yeah, okay, cool. But then we get there and I'm like, I could have said no. I could have said, no, I'm good.
I'm going to agree with you. It's always way more fun to illegally trespass than it is to, you know, ride around in the city bus with a permit.
These guys had rented the bus or something. Mm. Like it wasn't, you know.
Not as exciting.
Not as exciting, yeah.
We've been watching White House Plumbers. Where it's them, it's all about Watergate, and it's basically just a comedy of how dumb the situation is. I didn't know they had tried to break into a place like break into the Watergate building, the DNC, like six times.
Yeah,
that's hilarious.
Yeah, and they're bad at their jobs.
Yeah, very bad. It's very funny. All they had to do was say that they were
Belmingus. Yeah. Which
so easy.
Yeah, you know, because, and that's the difference between like you know, Republicans back then versus Republicans now. The Republican Party's gotten so good at that kind of thing that they're like, yo, we will be at Four Seasons landscaping. We have breaking into that place to do that was totally on purpose.
Oh man.
As they've said many times, they 100% meant to be at the Four Seasons landscaping.
They did. So, yeah. Yeah, I mean, yeah, break into the Capitol. It's a different party.
Yeah.
That's it. They'll tell you.
Yeah.
They'll let you know.
But getting things done. Yeah.
Man, that's exciting.
Yeah.
That's good.
So we don't have any question of the week today, which is fine because we dedicated all of last week. So we should have saved one of those questions, I guess. But if you would like to hear us ramble less about I don't even know what that was about, podcasts and how hard it is to be an in-demand actor.
The real struggles.
You can email us at mattanddwight@gmail.com. That is mattanddwight@gmail.com. I do have like a topic that I wanted to get into and a little bit of comedy gossip. But first, before we do that, tell me about your weekend. Where were you this weekend? Were you doing shows? What was going on?
I can't focus until you tell me about that.
Nope.
Really? Gonna make me okay. I'll fly. Well,
maybe the comedy gossip is about your show. So I don't know.
No, I meant the show that you did that you teased last week.
Oh yeah, the somewhat corporate gig. Thing
yeah,
that I did. Yeah, so
I was just I was like, it's gonna be a train wreck, and
it was not. It was not a train wreck.
Damn it.
It was yeah. So to set the scene,
sorry everybody
who didn't listen last time. Yeah, is that all you wanted to know? Whether or not it was a train wreck? Since it's not a train wreck. I don't have to tell the story. You're like, no, it's fine. Nobody gives a shit then.
yeah. We just lost our listenership.
So I was hired by Kelly School of Business to adapt the stand-up comedy class that I teach every year in Carmel, basically to mold it into 4 10-minute-long video modules that went over the basics of stand-up comedy, the basic concepts of it, and sort of reframe it as these principles in stand-up comedy and theories of comedy can be used in a business setting, right? You can use these basic principles and ideas about the way that you're an effective communicator, because a good comedian is an effective communicator. And so I really had to kind of stretch some things around, and I worked really closely with one of the instructors at Kelly School of Business, who's kind of like over this entire thing. And we kind of shared notes. Like I was like, all right, so this is what I'm thinking. Does this fit what you're going to be lecturing? Because they were here for a week. These employees were here for a week at Bloomington, and they had like classroom instruction all day, and then they would go out and do something fun at night. Mm-hmm. So this was their out of the box kind of thing, right? Get them out of the classroom, get them thinking about corporate communication in a different way. So these people watched these video modules, And then they each did a 3-minute stand-up routine. They had homework. Their homework was to write 3 minutes of material and to come and do it as an open mic, which was a closed open mic. So it was just them performing for each other. And there was about 30 of them. Mm-hmm. So that's why we did the 3-minute thing. And so honestly, they all did the work. They all came with 3 minutes. Some of them ran a couple, like a little long, you know, 4 minutes or whatever, but nobody was crazy long. Okay. And a couple people went short, and I told them it was fine if they only did 2 minutes or whatever, because mm-hmm. it was more of just an exercise. And their vibe was really great. It's this international group. There were people from all, there were Australian and New Zealand people there and British people. And like this multi-global corporation had brought them all in for this training at IU. And they were great. Like they were really rooting for each other, and were, and I did time up top and hosted it like a regular, I just emceed it like a mic.
Yep.
And they were good for me. I was pretty good that night as far as having like one like little zinger after everybody set, just like, mm-hmm. Here's like a little tag joke. And yeah, the whole thing actually went really, really well.
That's a W. That's a W. The way you made it sound last week is that you were hosting a high-end open mic and to people that are just coworkers. And I was like, all of that sounds horrendous.
Yeah. So some of them did work together. There were a couple, like basically a couple people from each office or essentially. So some of them knew each other, mm-hmm. but a lot of them had just got to know each other over that week. And so it was good. You know, it paid, the gig paid really well. Mm-hmm. IU School of Business Kelly was very, very excited with how it went. So hopefully if this thing becomes a regular thing, then I am done doing anything else. I'm never doing another show. I'm just hosting private open mics.
It's
for
the
corporations that want to pay to do it.
Did you plug our podcast as a way to build a successful 3 minutes?
I did not. I was very tempted to plug myself for hire for corporate gigs, but I was also like, I think it's implied. I think that they'll know how to come get me if they want me, you know.
Yeah
but well, yeah, so fun. That I had that on Wednesday night, and then Friday, Saturday I was in Cedar Rapids, Iowa at the Lucky Cat Comedy Club and Event Center, and my Friday night show, we had 12 people.
Ooh.
And
how many is a seat? I've never been a Lucky Cat.
It's not huge. It's not big, but it seats more than 12. I'll say that it can easily seat more than 12.
You felt the 12.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing is like they all sat right up front. Three of them, like one of them was the feature's mom and her two friends. And at first it was just the three of them, like right up until like showtime, it was just the three of them.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the owner's like, if you want to cancel, I totally understand. But if you want to go ahead and do it, and I'm always like, I'm here. Let's do a show. You know, I'll do a show for three people. I do not care. And for whatever reason, on Friday night, the rest of the people, I was going to say a bunch, but we know it's not a bunch. The other nine people who weren't all in one group all came in. Like basically we held the show until like 12 or 13 after. And by then everybody else was there who was going to be there. And so they all sat right up front. They were honestly great. They were a great audience for 12 people. I had so much fun. And then, you know, Haley, the owner's like, I'm sorry, you know, this sucks that this happens, but Saturdays have been way better. And she was right, because Saturday we had 13. So, you know, she nailed it.
She is not wrong.
Yeah.
She is not wrong. Is it just one show each night?
One show each night. Okay. Yes. No, we still did a second show.
Like, yeah, I was like, hey, you're there.
No. And so it was one of these things where, and I know that you know this too, where it's an interesting situation to be in, where again, the next night they sat kind of scattered all over the place. Mm-hmm. And this place probably seats like, let me think, there's like 12. It probably seats about 60 to 75, maybe.
Okay.
There's kind of like a back area, which if you were all the way back there, it actually wouldn't be great to be in a audience for a show, probably.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's not a huge space by any stretch of the imagination. But these 13 sat really kind of spread apart, but they were still like super fun. And I honestly had two really, really great sets where I was like loose. I was in the moment. I did a little bit of kind of crowd worky stuff. I worked on mm-hmm. new stuff. I did the hits, and I was just very in the pocket, and I had a great show, which seems weird to say about a show with 12 people and a show with 13 people. but they both were really great shows.
Yeah.
And it really was this thing of like driving back on Sunday. I'm just like, I'm not even saying it's infuriating, but it's just like one of these things. Like it's taken me a long time to get this good at comedy. Right. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty good now. Like I'm not great. And I told this to a comedian the other day. I don't think I'm a great comic. I think I'm a good comic who has moments of greatness. Mm-hmm. Like I have a joke here and there that other comics will be like, oh, that joke. Right. But I don't think I'm like across the board, like a great comedian. I think I'm good. But, you know, it's taken me 14 years to get this good. And it's just like, oh, it's kind of ironic, or Alanis Morissette version of ironic, that I'm this good now that I can have that much fun and have that good of a show in front of that few people. But I'm also getting to this point where I'm just running out of steam, if that makes mm-hmm. sense. You know, like the hashtag grind, the hustle life.
Yeah.
You know, I'm coming up on having done this for 15 years. I did music for probably 15 years before that. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm going to be 50 this year. I definitely feel less gas in the tank. Mm-hmm. You know, it's harder for me to like be motivated. It's like, I got to chop up clips. I got to post those clips. I did it for 2 months and a couple of them did okay. But it's just like the desire and drive to play the game as it's being played now. Right.
Right.
In TikTok and do skits and little sketches and things like that. All the things that the algorithm wants. I just don't have it. I mean, maybe I'll come back. Maybe this is low T. I don't know. You know, a lot of advertisements about low T.
Low T. Yeah. Help us out. Can we get a Hims subscription?
Yeah. Can we get a sponsorship from Hims?
Yeah. Do you think it's additional pressure because you're headlining like way more, like to sell tickets? Is that just?
Oh, it's not even a part pressure of it? Thing. It's not even a pressure thing. Like Haley, the owner of this place, is super cool. She was very apologetic. I was apologetic because also it's like, you know, I'm sorry that I can't draw, but it's also like, I'm not a small headliner compared to who they have in there. I'm like on mm-hmm. par with the type of headliners they usually have in there. Cause again, it's a smaller room. It's not a bigger room. And so, you know, and it's really beautiful weather that weekend and blah, blah, blah. And all the reasons that we, you know, give, you know, I'm not talking about pressure. I'm talking about like bigger career stuff. I'm not talking about the actual shows because I'm having fun for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like
on stage telling jokes, you're still enjoying that.
Exactly. Part of it. Like, yes, because I've gotten to where I'm pretty good at it. I'm pretty mm-hmm. good at getting up there and communicating and connecting with an audience, no matter what size they are. Because again, we don't have to go that far back to when I was, you know, in Tacoma Comedy Club, where both my headlining shows were almost sold out. The feature shows I was on that weekend were packed too, mm-hmm. were almost sold out. Like we had, you know, a couple hundred people in there for every show, even the ones that I was headlining, even the matinee one.
Yeah.
And doing just as well at that as I am in front of 12 people in Iowa. It's more the career stuff. It's just like and it could just be because also like limestone pressure and all that kind of stuff. Cause I've been very busy with not focusing on my comedy career.
Right.
I'm going physically to go do the shows that I have booked and everything, but I'm looking at the rest of my calendar and there's not a lot on there for the rest of the year.
Yeah.
Because I haven't been as aggressive about my booking as I should have. And I do, this is a thing where I've noticed every year it's definitely that feeling that I got less in the tank.
Right.
And so if it's going to continue to be a Prometheus situation Prometheus is the one who stole fire, whichever the one that has to roll the stone up the hill every day and then it comes back down and that's his fate.
Oh yeah.
Like one of the Greek. Yeah. That might be Prometheus. I can't remember, but
ASAP. I don't know.
ASAP,
I'm sure someone will definitely. Yeah. ASAP. Someone will definitely correct us.
Yeah.
Anytime we get anything wrong, someone walks up and is like, hey, actually, Dwight.
Yeah, that's the only way that we get engagement and followers. but yeah, so I mean, which is a good synopsis of doing anything in the arts, or really, I mean, there's a lot of jobs that are like that too, where you're just rolling the boulder every day, mm-hmm. all day, and then you have to start over at the exact same spot every time. But as that goes on, I just feel like I don't know how much more I have in me to try to push to the next level. I think I'm going to coast.
Yeah.
This is me giving up. And then the next 20 years of my career will be what I call a victory lap. <Ghost. laughs> This is a victory lap, y'all. I mean, I could be writing new jokes, but no, this is the victory lap for that joke that I wrote 18 years ago.
That's funny. I do feel like there are certain parts of the year where this feeling occurs, where it's just like, it's just kind of burnout. You run out of bandwidth. Mm. And it's not even just, it's like you said, it's not about the things that you do on stage. It's just like, I'm constantly thinking of what can I be doing online to further or get one step ahead. Mm-hmm. That's why I was like, a couple months back, I was like, I'm just going to set it down. I'm not even going to worry about it, because I'm not sure if, unless you're doing like crazy numbers, it's not really moving the needle on social media, because mm-hmm. we're so saturated. So it's important to do. I think it does help to do it. But it's not something that has to be all consuming every day, which is what the algorithm wants. It's fucking feed me, dog. Feed me.
That's what the algorithm wants. And we're seeing a lot of people get big opportunities from playing the game. Mm-hmm. But those are people in their 20s or that have the type of obsession to work that angle that, I just don't have. And I know that you struggle with it as well, too. And it's one of those things, too, where it is the online stuff. And I think it is also burnout. But if I had like a booking agent who was just like, you go this weekend, you're going there this weekend, right. You're going there.
Right.
I mean, I would be so into that. Yeah. You know, I know that sounds like, oh, of course you would. I mean, no, even if it was small shows, small things,
it would take like, so much bandwidth. Like it would give you so much bandwidth back.
Right.
Just like consistently asking for shows. Sitting down and doing the work of asking for shows does take a lot of energy, because you have mm-hmm. to like mentally prepare to do it.
Yeah.
Like if you to book your calendar to the level that it's going to be full, you need to sit down a couple times a week and just for an hour ask for shit.
Yeah. And constantly be, like keeping your spreadsheet up to date or whatever. Every time you see another comic post about a room that you never heard of, then you got to research that, and you got to mm-hmm. find, do I want to do that room? Maybe I do want to do that room. So I definitely, I'm sure it'll, ebbs and flows and things will turn around and I'll get more energy to get after it again. I've been telling myself, I was like, I need to clip up some more stuff and maybe do another big push for that. And again, I don't know for what end other than I'm supposed to.
Yeah, right. It's like what is the goal of why, like, because I'm still very slow at making videos and clipping mm-hmm. stuff up. So it's like at least an hour. And it's just like, what am I sacrificing here? I'm a married man. I'm on the road all the time. And, I do other things. It's like, am I really spending several hours of my day or my week making clips that are going to get like minimal engagement? And the answer should be yes, because I'm supposed to do it now. You know what I mean?
Yeah. That's why I really hope this acting career of mine takes off after.
It started out.
Three lines.
I will say, on a bus.
I will say that it's, it is nice when someone specifically asks you, because then I didn't have to act. Like, he's just like, I just want you to come on and just be you. Like, just be you.
Yeah.
Like, basically, I just like, in my head, I'm like, just don't look directly at the camera and you'll be fine. Mm-hmm. Just say the lines. Don't look at the camera. Done.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, that's awesome. That's funny.
So when this takes off, and then I will talk about how I always hated stand-up comedy, and I only used it as a 14-year-long launch pad.
Some of y'all can't play the long game.
No, I, if anybody is listening to this, I would love to do your show, man. I would please, like, there's also that sort of thing, too. Like, do I always have to ask? Can I be asked sometimes, mm-hmm. It's not like that. There's a million of us all vying for the same spots. And so you have to be the squeaky wheel in as polite a way as you can without being a jerk about it. But you have to just be not even the squeaky wheel. You just have to be the consistent, like, mm-hmm. I'd love to do that show. Stay on top of it, I don't know. Maybe I need to get back to drinking caffeine. I think that's what this whole thing is about.
You need the boost.
I don't have low T, I've got low C, and I need to get that C up, baby.
Caffeine and taurine. Man, I was at Go Bananas in Cincinnati for six shows, Thursday through Sunday, and I'd say four of them were good, which I'll take those numbers.
Yeah.
Thursday, same thing that you dealt with. It was, you know, I think we had 10 people in there not sitting together. It's like, couldn't even see like two of them. They were so far back and it's so spread out. And Bananas is a decent sized room. So
yeah,
it was like, I'm always happy, I guess, when the Thursday show isn't great, because I don't want that high to like mess up the rest of the weekend. You know, I got off stage Thursday and I was like, oh, we can only go up from here.
That's
legit. We can only go up from here. The show I sold like two t-shirts. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't like a total loss. I brought a Cam O'Connor and Willie Bostic from Indianapolis to do some time. Cam used to be the guy that booked Go Bananas and he moved home. So it was nice little homecoming for him.
Yeah.
He was the guy that, you know, got yelled at for not booking people enough. And I was one of them. I was like, we were reminiscing. I was like, man, I haven't been here for like several years. And then like, I think one weekend before he left, he let me open up for Tom Takkar. And it was like, I was joking with him. I was like, man, I finally got in here and then the booker left. So start from scratch. and then like Friday, typical Friday, early show, probably the strongest set of the weekend. And then late show Friday, probably the worst show of the weekend. It's like you can't even enjoy the 2 hours after the shows because it's like it was instantly bad.
Yeah.
This like disdain. I haven't had like a set where I could feel they just did not like me. They just not. First of all, like nobody was like really crushing, but there were some pops from both Cam and Willie and the host. It was like as soon as I started to get into quote unquote real shit or like race and politics, stuff that killed all weekend, they were just not about it. We did not come here for this. It's that like that Cincinnati suburban redneck mix. And I'm glad it was just like all at one show, but it was so, it felt terrible.
Yeah.
Couldn't even enjoy how good the first show was because I was just mad.
How many t-shirts did you sell on that late show?
I don't think.
They didn't want to buy your t-shirt of you riding the back of a Black Power fist?
I think I just walked to the bar next door.
Yeah. Did you do the thing where you carry your merch up on stage and then carry it right back off stage without saying anything about it? Because like, the show was so bad.
It's just a sweat rag.
Yeah, exactly.
I was like, because the first show I sold a ton. And then I went to my car to like restock. So the way I do my merch, I just carry like three of each size in a duffel bag. And then I can just go back to my car if I need more sizes.
Right.
I went back to restock in between shows. I was like, I'm gonna fucking kill it tonight. No, you won't.
Yeah.
But Megan got to come to that one. I've been on the road so much that we don't get to spend her days off together. And I'm like, I'm gone this weekend, the next weekend, and the next weekend is Limestone. So it was cool that she got to like come and like hang out, and we got to hang out. So that was nice. And then Saturday we kind of just hung out with some local comics in Cincy. That's much more pleasurable now that it's less of a, I don't think I'm hurting anyone's feelings when I say this, but Cincinnati scene used to be just drinking and cocaine. And I'll give you the drinking, but not all day, and definitely not the cocaine. That's a drug that I'm horrified of. Does that make me sound like less of a cool comic? I'm definitely not going viral.
Well, I don't. Do you care? I mean, do you want to be the cool cocaine comic?
I don't, like, for a year, maybe. No, I don't want to be the. I've never had any interest of like that culture, that scene.
Yeah, I always hated it, and I did do cocaine occasionally, but it was always to stay up to keep drinking more, because that's how far my alcoholism was. It's like, oh, I want to keep drinking, and I don't want to black out, so I'll do a little coke with these people. I never bought it; it was just around, and I never did a ton of it. But it was like that was the context that I used it basically like a Red Bull. I could have just slammed a Red Bull, up my nose, pure Colombian Red Bull. You know, and so, it would just like be a tiny little bump, and it was just to kind of like jolt you back up and like, oh, I can keep drinking for another 3 hours. It was just like the dumbest shit. Like, you know, your body, everything in your body's telling you, like, you're done, cowboy, go to bed. You're done, wrap it up. And you're like, I don't want to wrap it up yet.
It's only 4 a.m.
Yeah, I could get so much sadder. Why would I stop now?
That's so funny. Oh, man. It wasn't around. Like, I didn't see it. You know, there are several comics that are sober now. I still like, I it's no secret, I like to have my drinks, I like to have my beer, especially Cincinnati, one of my favorite breweries. Rheingeist has the patio on the roof, just like hang out outside and chill and kind of just kill the day. And it was really cool hanging with Cam and Willie and seeing them as comics that don't get to be on the road or like don't get to do a bunch of shows back to back to back, just like kind of like figure stuff out between sets, like maybe I'm gonna move this around and I lost them here, but maybe I can pick up the energy. That was really cool to see, because a lot of times it's just like people are just like, fuck that audience.
Yeah
Like, seriously, they'll be like, yeah, just fuck that audience, I'm not gonna change anything, I didn't do anything wrong,
yeah,
fuck them. That's how I was Friday Late Show. I did do the thing where I was like, you guys suck. I didn't say this, but I was like, I'm not changing up the set. Like, this is, now I'm leaning in harder.
Right. Like, well, sometimes you do that move and it's what breaks them, when you kind of call them on it, you know, but it doesn't always break them. And what happened when you did it this time?
It was just, they were just, I remember one guy's eye roll was so long. Like, it was like started at his knees and like went behind his head. It's like, he gonna be black the whole time? He gonna be black the whole time?
Please tell me you said that line on stage. I feel like you've said that line on stage before. Yeah.
Yeah, I did. I also did the tag, because I do a Mumford and Sons joke, and then I'm like, half the room just wants him to talk about Mumford and Sons again. I do like a Black History bit, and talk about critical race theory, and then I got off stage and the comics were just like, that was amazing. I was like, don't talk to me, I'm not in the mood for this. They're like, you just stood up there and you fucking gave it to them, you didn't break. I was like, yeah, that's not the goal. The goal isn't to be combative with the audience, at least for me.
Yeah. I'm just
that like roller coaster of having a great show and then a bad show. It's just always such a weird feeling.
Yeah.
It just always is. And then Saturday, both shows were good. Sunday was fun, but there was like, you know, I think we had about 30, which is still small for that room, but it was Mother's Day.
And yeah. So you had my entire weekend plus 5. Okay, good. All right.
Yeah, but I didn't get in the car and was like, oh, that was fun. That was fun. Yeah. It's like sometimes 6 shows in a row is too many.
Yeah, it does take a toll on you. You know, sometimes the clubs will do this thing where there's like an early matinee show on Saturday. Like, that's what the thing was. So like Saturday, you start that third show and you've been in the same building now for like 8 hours, you know, and it's just like,
did I do this joke?
Did I do this joke in the set already? Or was that, I don't want to make it sound like what we do is that taxing, but I'm always like somewhat physically taxed. I'm always like, I'm hungry when I get off stage if I headline, because there is yes, you're not physically like building something, you know, you're not laying bricks or pouring concrete or anything like that, but you do have like an incredibly high mental focus, and that is exhausting when you hold that for such a long time. And so, yeah, when you do show after show after show after show, it will kind of wipe you out, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And it's like the energy can go one or two ways. Like, it can be really great, and that could be taxing, because you feel like a preacher that just like gets off stage sweating, like, oh, I gave it to him today. Everybody got saved. And then like the bad show where you're like trying to figure out, like a mathematician, like what is going to break you.
Yeah.
And sometimes you just say, fuck it. I'm done. I'm not doing no more math problems.
I've announced it on stage before. I remember like just staying in my lane, like joke, mm-hmm. joke, and like finally getting an audience. And I remember like I've done this maybe twice. I did it one time in Atlanta at Church Bar, which was like not a super long set. I think I was doing like 15. But and I've also done it in a long headlining set where the headlining set, I remember like taking the mic, for some reason I had the mic in the mic stand, or no, I just reached up and grabbed the mic stand with my free hand and just slammed it on the stage.
Yeah.
And I was like, mark it, 28 minutes. That's how long it took for you guys to get on board.
Yeah.
With this stuff. Like, let's go. Like almost a half hour. And it's like, you have to, like, that's the gig, man. That's the job, is you have to just stay in your lane, do your time.
You have to
try to break them. If they don't, I understand the comics like complimenting you though, too, because that's a skill set to stay on it and not break, not let them not start tap dancing up there. Like, I don't know. What do you guys want to talk about? Oh, let's do crowd work instead or whatever. Like, you're like, nope, this is what I want to talk about. This is my show. And that's confidence. Like,
this just, I wonder if the first show went bad, if I would have started trying, like, I got to salvage this night. Like, but the first show went great. And so I was like, I know, like, my confidence was so up here that it just didn't rack or waver. But
like, well, there's also the same thing. Like, you coming off of a hot show is very similar to like when you do a joke, even if you're doing like decently or doing well, and you do a joke that you've been doing for a couple of years, mm-hmm. and you have the research, you have the numbers, the data. This joke is good. This joke is at least, you should at least laugh at it a little bit. A group of people should at least, at the bare minimum. And when it gets nothing, like a joke that always works, it's nothing, you just want to be like, you're wrong. As a group of people, like, I've done the research. This is a good joke. For whatever reason, you guys are incorrect.
Right.
Like, you know, and so there is that same side of thing. Like, when you come up with a hot show, like, I'm good. What's wrong with y'all? I'm good at this.
And then I think the first night, or the first two shows, last week I just featured all week. Mm-hmm. And so I messed up like where I put bits around the check drop. And it's like, it's different, like, because you get that energy suck and people just are looking at their checks and not paying attention. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to go into like this long bit. And a lot of comics have like specific things that they say when they get the check, but you have to be able to time it out. You can't be mid, you know, long setup and then be like, also tip your wait staff 20%. Let's get back to the bit. So that's something that I got to like mess around with the rest of the shows and did some new stuff that is promising. I'm excited to work on. So very productive weekend. Happy about it.
Good. Well, let's go ahead and roll into the next thing then, which is, where are you going to be this next weekend? You said, you told Megan that you're going weekend after weekend after weekend. Where are you going to be next weekend?
So I am in Springfield, Ohio, Wednesday, the day this comes out, the 17th, May 17th. And then this weekend, I am in Columbus, Ohio, doing some Don't Tell shows. I don't know how to get you the information on the location. Follow Don't Tell Columbus on IG. Seems to be the best way. I don't know. What do you tell people?
If you buy a ticket, you'll be told where the show is. That's how it works.
Okay.
I mean, that's the thing, is like, you know, like, you don't need to know more than that. It's on this day, it's in this city at this time. Mm-hmm. And that's all someone needs to know to decide whether or not they want to do that. And then, you get the people get emailed the day of the show at like 10 a.m. or noon or something like that. That's how it works. So, but we know you're in Columbus and you're doing Don't Tells. And I think we've talked about it on this podcast before, but Simon, who's running the Don't Tells out there, does a great job. So these are definitely shows that people are going to want to go to.
Yeah. The word is out. Like, everybody in Ohio talks about how good those shows are. So I'm super excited about it.
Yeah. Well, very good. I don't have anything going on. I'm going to be just working on Limestone stuff. And I will be at the Bloomington Music Expo on Saturday at Switchyard Park. If anyone wants to stop by and see me at the Limestone booth, I will be there hanging out. Spreading the good word of Limestone, signing people up to chance to win some tickets to see Melissa Villaseñor.
Oh, nice.
Taking some entry slips for that, but just, yeah, getting the word out there about the festival. So that's where you guys can come see me.
It's getting close. Couple weeks.
Yeah. Since we have broached up against the idea of comedy festivals, I did want to tell you the hot goss that I heard. So there is a comedy festival that went on hiatus, like a lot of them did during the pandemic era. And when it came back, a different group of comics took up the mantle of this this Midwest comedy festival. And it just happened not that long ago. And so I heard through the grapevine, and a couple of people had direct knowledge of this information, passed it along to me. Apparently, the new group of comics who took up the running of this festival did something very unethical and very uncool. Two things, really. One, they directly reached out to comics in their scene, asking them, like, hey, are you going to submit to the festival? And then charged them the submission fee. And then none of those comics got in. Ooh. That were directly asked to submit. And I mean, personally, one-on-one, not like just posting like, hey, we're taking submissions. Like literally one person who's running the festival going to another comedian going, hey, are you going to submit? And so that's never cool to do that.
That's grimy. Grimy.
And the other thing that they did was, the couple of comics who are running this thing, they gave themselves, how many sets do you think they gave themselves on their own festival?
All up, like
not hosting sets. These are like feature sets, not headlining sets either, but feature spots on shows. How many think they gave themselves?
So, okay. How many, just guess how many, give me like how many comics got into the festival? Do some quick math.
I think they probably had about 30 or 40 comics that got into the festival. Okay. It was a 4-day long festival, I think.
They just probably put themselves on every show.
They gave themselves five sets. Each of the producers of this festival gave themselves five feature sets throughout the festival. And the person who was telling me this said, with Limestone, do you ever, I've done two sets in the 10 years of Limestone. One of them Jared made me do on the second year. And the other one I did because we had a day of drop off that somebody couldn't, I can't remember now what happened, but somebody couldn't do their set. And it was on a Sarah Schaefer show, who I love, obviously, because we brought her back this year as a new headliner at the Bishop. So it wasn't like it wasn't the big marquee shows or anything like that. So in the 10 years of doing the festival, I've done two spots. Five spots each.
It was just their festival.
Yeah.
How many times does an audience member see the same set?
I don't know, but I also heard through the grapevine that the ticket and badge sales for that thing were super low. So probably not, that didn't work out great either in that sense either. So
yeah, it's a local showcase where you didn't put any locals on. What are we doing?
Yeah.
What are we doing, y'all?
That is, yeah. And you know, some people might argue like, well, we put in all this work to run the festival. No, that's not. That's like, you wear, if you're running a festival, you're a producer, dog. You wear your producer hat, you know, like
put on all this work to book yourself.
Exactly.
There's nothing wrong with just saying that. But like, you're taking people's money and
Yeah. If it was an invitation only festival, or if there were, you know, they were just upfront at the beginning, like, there's going to be book spots and submission spots, which is also kind of like a weird, dangerous ground for a festival to be in, you know, outside of the idea of like, we're booking big headliners, but I do know festivals that'll be like headliners and some comics, opening comics or invitation. And then there's also submission. It gets a little hazy in there, but yeah, it's like, if you were a promoter or a show, like if you run a weekly show or a monthly show or whatever, and you host it every week, great. It's your show. You're the host. Awesome. You put in the work. But if you are direct support featuring every single one of those shows that you put on, or headlining a bunch of them that you put on, then you're not putting the show on for any other reason than your own
right
ego and try to network with the headliner. You always put yourself direct support so you can network with them. It's just like, no, you have to be a good producer first.
These and people sound like they are very new to comedy. It sounds like
they're relatively, I'll put it in the chats. And so, let's just say it was, you know, this festival, you know, used to reach a high watermark with the original person who ran it. And now, you know, it's just not the same that's definitely much more of a low tide, a low flow. You know,
oh, it's so sad. It's sad.
Have I given you enough clues? Do you think? Do you want to guess? Do you want to guess in the chat?
Yeah.
Okay. This is a good way to end the
I know. Podcast. Yeah.
Can Dwight guess the? If you also think you guess which podcast it is, message us. I think you're on the, but that's not the actual name of it. You kind of said it close, but not.
Okay. Yeah. I couldn't think. Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
yeah. I just typed nonsense in there. Yeah, I think it's, yeah. But yeah, this is, it's really, really gross.
It's shitty.
It's just taking advantage of people, taking advantage of power. It's wrong.
Exactly, because you're like, oh, you know, submit to have a chance to do, you know, do this thing, and then oh, that many less people got to be in it because they took all those spots,
and you just pissed everyone off in your local scene.
Oh yeah,
like yeah, you're done, dog. Like, what are you doing? Yeah. You gotta move. I would never put that person on a show.
No, exactly. Yeah, same thing. And you know, and it's kind of like a same sort of thing had also happened with that one festival. God, I can't remember the name of this one. I legitimately can't remember the name of this festival, but it was run by this guy. Do you remember that? It was around for a couple of years. It was another sort of Midwest based festival, but after a couple of years of it, the guy just burned every bridge because it was like, it was a giant ego thing for him, and he was kind of fucking everybody over. So yeah, if you're going to run a festival or run a show, you have to put the festival or the show before your own personal individual comedy interests. Right. You know, I'm not saying you can't benefit from that. Again, if you run a hot weekly show, then yes, people are probably going to, you know, want to have you on their shows and like all that. And that's great. But your actual show that you run, it can't just be a showcase for your own comedy.
Yeah. Yeah. If you run a comedy festival, comics are going to hate you regardless. So don't make it easy for them.
Yeah.
Don't be, because you took advantage and did this shit to them.
Yeah. You don't. Don't make it every comic. Let there be some comics that are like, no, they do it right. They're I didn't get in, but they're fair about it. You know, like anyway. So that was the hot goss that we came across.
Man, Matt is always connected with the wire. I was like, you blow my mind sometimes. I just do I just need to be on Twitter more or?
This was told to me directly. So, by a couple of different people. So, it just kind of fell in my lap is how this happened. But, nice. If you think you know what the festival is that I was talking about, email us at mattanddwight@gmail.com. Do not put it in the comments on Facebook like somebody did the last time.
Someone did that on YouTube as well.
Someone guessed in the comments.
Yeah. Nailed it.
Yeah. And yeah, we're not saying that you were incorrect. You were completely right. But let's keep that shit on the DMs, dog. Because we're not going to confirm in the comments whether or not you're right.
Right. Like, what do you think? what do you think? Like, this Easter egg hunt that we're putting on? I'm going to delete that shit.
Yeah. All right. I think that's do it, right? We had a good weird rambling one, but we got into some stuff. I'm in a weird headspace. You've been killing it, you're crushing it. You got these back-to-back weekends. It's good. I'm wondering, tired. Like, when I finally do tap out, like, who are you gonna have do this podcast with you?
It'll just be a different pod. It'll still be you, but from the most insane perspective.
Yeah,
you talking me out of it.
Yeah, I'll be like, I don't know, man. I've been pretty happy ever since I quit.
Yeah, there will be no more secret chats. Yeah. Matt's just spilling all the tea.
Oh, that's right. That's that was like the podcast I had with my buddy Nick. That was when I was a former tour manager, and I was still tour managing bands, and he was a former tour manager. We would talk about the music industry and about specific bands, and because he was a former tour manager, he would talk some shit, and I would just be like, I guess that's one opinion. It'd be just like that, but I finally get to be the one who talks the shit, which is very exciting.
Ah, man, don't make me sad at the end of the
pod. Okay, I'm not gonna quit this month.
Thank you. Give us a month. Give us a few more episodes.
Yeah, I gotta wait till this. I mean, we gotta do enough episodes that we can go into. We can go into reruns, right?
Best ofs.
Yeah, season 9. We gotta have 9 seasons, right? And then we can go into syndication. You know.
Yep.
This is on WGN already, but we want to keep coming, you know.
Yeah, we got to give AI bots enough to work with so they can run the show themselves.
That's true. We got to give them more data. That's for sure.
Well, we appreciate you all for listening. Matt, you got anything else for us?
If you ever see me on a bus, I am acting.